This interview is with Hildegard Usselmann Krauss. The taping is being produced in the MSU Recording Studio, November 20th, 1987. The interviewer is June Dobrovich, representing the Heritage Education Commission. Hildegard, you've been introduced to audiences in this area for many years as our own incomparable Hildegard. Fargo-Moorhead claims you as our own, and you are now called the Dean of Local Organists. But you have not always lived here. Where did you come from?
Well, of course, when I was a little girl, well, we lived in Fort Rice, North Dakota. And then we lived in Mandan. And, of course, when we lived in Fort Rice, well, my parents wanted me to have music, and there was nobody there to teach me music, so they sent me to Bismarck, to the sister school there.
Tell me, how did they know? How did your parents know that you were going to be a musician?
Well, my father, of course, could play any musical instrument. He never had a lesson. He was just a natural. He could pick up any instrument and play it.
How wonderful.
And my mother was a musician, too, but she had to study. Uh-huh. But she was really at one time very good. But the talent, I think, mostly from my father, because when he would hear a tune, why, he could very well play it pretty well, and then he'd kind of show me how to do it, and we both got so we played by ear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I
that
think,
came
that,
in handy a few
yes,
times off that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you say they sent you to a school. You want to tell me about that?
Yes, in Bismarck, a sister school, because, you know, they wanted me to be protected where, you know, I was strict and everything, and mm-hmm. I took lessons there and until about the eighth grade, and then my folks... one thing I forgot to tell you maybe a long time ago was that I was in the eighth grade in Winter Garden, Florida, with my great-grandmother. Mm-hmm. My father wanted to buy an orange grove down there, and so he... went down first, and then he sent my mother and I down there, and so I was in eighth grade there.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother got malaria fever, and so we came back, and we lived in, he had a grocery store in Mandan.
But this training in music, from first to seventh grade then, well, you were away from home, just like a boarding school.
Well, I had to practice, and
sure.
You know, it
yeah.
was so many hours a day, mm-hmm. and which I wasn't very good at. I did a lot of faking, mm-hmm. and the teacher didn't like that very well.
No. But then your father was in business in Mandan,
yes, uh-huh.
so you went to high school in Mandan?
Yes, and mm-hmm. I graduated from high school in Mandan.
Mm-hmm.
And I took lessons from somebody there that, you know, different teachers that taught.
When did your musical career really take off? When did you start? What were your first performances?
Well, I played for Silent Pictures in Mandan. We had a theater there. And they only had them on Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go to school and then I'd play these silent pictures, because there was nobody in Mandan that could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I could do it, but I could fake it. And
sure.
That's where I learned to kind of cue what they call cue a picture.
Sure.
And so I had that position at the Friday and Saturday, and I think I'm not quite sure, but I think I made 25 cents a night.
Oh, that's an interesting
Or maybe 50 cents, 50. But I know it wasn't over
more.
That.
Well, I guess musicians...
And so no wonder they wanted me to play.
musicians' wages
right.
improved and said, well, tell me, when did you come to Fargo? When did you...
Well, if you want to know dates, you know, I
no.
told you that I can't tell you dates, but I graduated from high school, uh-huh. and then I wanted to come to Fargo mm-hmm. and take an expert accountant course.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend here, a lady friend that I stayed with, and I hadn't enrolled in the school, and then I got started to go over to the Stone Piano Company. And I met a lot of musicians over there, and would-be musicians, and friends, and I got interested again in music, and then I started to take lessons
mm-hmm.
because there was a conservatory upstairs from the Stone Piano Company,
mm-hmm.
which is now
Lowe's?
Yes,
yeah.
that's
mm-hmm.
right. Sure. And so then I still didn't go in for the other thing that I was going to do, and they were looking for somebody to cue a picture over at the Orpheum Theater, which has now been removed.
Yes.
And there were several people tried out. They had a score with that, but it was just, you couldn't read it, really. It was a one line, and then a suggested piece for the score. And this was such, such that the music was above the ledger line that I would defy anybody to read it. In fact, I still have the score that came with it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just had enough ingenuity, I guess is what you call it, to fake it. And they hired me after having a lot of very good musicians try out for it. And it wasn't because I was that good, but it was because I
you could improvise.
That's right,
yeah,
improvise.
Right. So well, tell me now, some people who might listen to this tape might wonder, what was the Orpheum Theater? That was a long time ago.
Oh, yes, that
what,
was a long time.
What did the Orpheum Theater do?
Well, the Orpheum Theater had quite a few celebrities, personal appearances celebrities, and then silent pictures at weekends. And then we had, there was an orchestra some of the time, and maybe some people would even remember Norman Ospie that had played the violin, and there was a man from Moorhead, Yelvisacker, that played the flute. Maybe you remember that name.
Dr. Yelvisacker, who taught at Concordia, or maybe one of his sons?
I think probably one of his sons. I'm pretty sure that's it, and a drummer and myself, and a violinist, and we played for silent pictures, and then when we didn't have them, I played alone for them.
Mm.
And from there, I went over to the State Theater, which was just atmospheric, beautiful theater.
The State Theater is gone too now, so
yes.
Tell our listeners here what that was like.
Oh, that was such a beautiful theater. It was called an atmospheric theater, and it had the clouds moving and the stars twinkling, and it was really a beautiful marble steps going up to the upper level, and it was really a lovely theater. And that's, of course, when Eddie came, my husband came, to manage the theater, and that's where I met him.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, but tell me, where did he come from, and why was he sent for especially to
well,
come to Faro?
Well, Eddie was a troubleshooter. He was sent, he was single, of course, and he was sent different theaters. He'd been at the State Lake in Chicago, and he had been in the Hennepin Orpheum in Minneapolis as manager, and he was sent in this territory to sort of bolster up the business and take care of the, well...
He scheduled different acts into Fargo? That was at the time
well,
in the Fargo?
Well, it was, they were the managers here that didn't understand how to promote a picture coming.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they put out for the day, they put out the new picture, and nobody knew what the next picture was. Right. You see, the playwright up and...
Well, how many of our theaters in Fargo, Moorhead at that time then, were under his direction?
Well, just two, the State and then the Fargo. And when the Fargo opened, they had a man from Minneapolis, and he was here only 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put Eddie in charge of all the theaters and also the Moorhead Theater. So mm-hmm. Eddie had charge of the theaters, three theaters.
Big job.
Yes, mm-hmm. big job is right. Mm-hmm. And at one time there was a Garrick Theater here,
yes.
And I did a little substituting there.
Mm-hmm.
And but the State Theater was the beautiful theater at that time, and then the Fargo, of course. And then when the State Theater was closed, why then they sent me down to Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you told me you weren't good with dates, so I'm not going to press you there.
No.
But now, can you just sort of estimate about how many years you played for silent movies before the talkies came in?
I really couldn't because it's so mixed up with so many different places and things.
Uh-huh.
You know, I even went up to Grand Forks and played for vaudeville for the same company because I could read the music, you know, that they, with the marking on, sometimes you couldn't tell what there was, but you had to just guess, and I was pretty good at guessing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that I was that good, but I just had a knack of knowing what to play.
Oh, that playing by ear will get you everywhere, won't it?
That's right. It just, that's what it was. And if I couldn't read it, why, it just seemed to me like there was some sense that I could chord it somewhere or another and develop it.
You know, well, we've been friends for a long time, and I remember a little story you told me once about how the orchestra greeted you back after your marriage to Eddie.
Oh yes.
Tell me.
Well, that was at the State Theater, and so we just we went over to Moorhead, a Reverend Hall at a Methodist Church, I believe, in Moorhead is where we were married, and then. I had to go back and play the rest of the picture. At that time, there was an orchestra in the pit, the Bayerstedt Orchestra, that was simply marvelous, and it was a real nice organ. I had studied in Minneapolis with Eddie Dunstetter about this new organ. And so I didn't know that anybody knew that we were getting married, and so when it leaked out somewhere or another, and the orchestra, the minute I was in the back, they cut right into the picture and started, "Here comes the bride." And I walked down the aisle to the organ, and I was just shaking, and everybody, you know, was looking, you know, wondered what had happened or what it was all about. And I can't remember what I played or whether I played.
It sounds to me like other musicians have been having fun with you for a lot of years.
Oh, yes, they really did. If anybody remembers the Biosted Orchestra, they were so marvelous. They could do the same kind of thing that I could do, only better. I mean, but can you imagine a 5-6-piece orchestra being able to play without a sheet of music in front of them?
No score at all.
And cueing a picture? This is something that just kind of comes to you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you hit it well. Sometimes I say I hit it well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's probably pretty bad. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it is a certain knack to it, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, did this orchestra play at the Crystal Ballroom as well? Their entire job just at the stage?
It was at the job, yes. And they were going to build a theater in someplace out of Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and they wanted to know if I would come. They were going to install an organ, I would come and be the organist. And I said, yes, I was ready to quit, you know, mm-hmm. at the State Theater. And then that's when Eddie came on, you know.
A little competition.
And so I told him, I said, well, I've got a chance, I said, to go to make more money and so on. Well, he says, we'll take care of that. He
said, raise your salary. Yeah, bring you over to the Fargo.
Of course, it wasn't very much anyway.
No.
You know, I mean, the pay was, people just laugh at when I tell them some of the stories, you know, of playing.
Can you remember offhand maybe what your average monthly salary was?
Well,
I mean, so that it's kind of an interesting thing.
I think about $40 or $50
a month, yeah.
Yeah,
pitiful.
Yeah, it was just enough, you know, to have me. My father had passed away, and my mother was teaching school. And mm-hmm. as I said, I was going to take an expert accountant course.
But I
don't believe I was ever cut out for figures.
Well, you were kind of on your own then,
from
the time
mm-hmm.
that you finished high school and came to Fargo until this Eddie came to town, and you
and
fell
for him.
And
he changed my mind.
And he changed your life, mm-hmm. too,
he
didn't
did.
He?
Did, you
yes.
know, we had kind of a quick courtship because we had no place to go.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a rooming house, and of course, those days, it was a little bit different, you know.
Yeah,
you didn't take a man
to your room, no.
And he lived in a hotel, and of course, naturally, he wouldn't take me there,
no.
And so we really didn't go together very long. We'd sit over in the cafe and order food and maybe hold hands, you know,
mm-hmm.
keep ordering food stacked mm-hmm. up so we could stay
sure.
and talk and
mm-hmm.
visit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, that's the story.
That's the story of that swift courtship.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so then you went over to the Fargo. Well, when you were playing at the Fargo, did you continue to play at other, but you were pretty well taken up there at the Fargo?
Well, then, of course, the State closed, you know,
uh-huh.
after a while. And then when the Fargo opened, they had a man from Chicago that played for about, I think he was here about 6 weeks, something
mm-hmm.
like that. And I wasn't hired by Eddie to take it over, but I did. I left the State Theater and went to the Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
But, now wait a minute. I'm a little ahead of my time
okay.
because I went to WDAY. Earl Reinicke called me and asked me if I would like to come up and be the organist at WDAY.
Were you the organist then at WDAY before you went to the Fargo Theater? I thought it was after.
I guess it was after.
Yeah,
this is a long time ago, June, that you're making me
go back.
I'm showing up.
Well,
just how much I remember.
Well, no, that's okay. I guess that.
Because I was at WDAY 28 years.
Yeah.
You know, going all the places
and all the
changes I made. And
well,
never thought I'd ever have to be interviewed by you.
Well, see, I've been reading up about you, too, besides what I've known before. And I had guessed that perhaps the talkies had come in and after the talkies came in, they didn't need those
organists
for the silent
room. Well, that's the whole thing. And I was there I was at the Fargo Theater when the first talking picture came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot what it was. Was it Charlie Chaplin or something?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I probably have it written
finally
down
someplace. Finally got a voice after
a
while.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And Anyway, well, then you see, I lost the job, and that is when Earl Reinicke called and asked me if I'd come to WAY, and I was there for 28 years. And they were wonderful years because everybody was so great.
Now, what kind of things did you do besides play the organ at WAY? Because I know that they got you as an organist, but then they always gave you other jobs besides.
Oh, my. Well, I took almost every person that came up for an audition, I took their auditions. If they'd sing or whatever it was, Ken Kennedy, of course, was alive then, and he would cue me as to what, and I had a lot of people that wanted to talk and speak and so sing, and some of them didn't even know how. Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite things is a girl that came up and she wanted to sing at WAY. And so Ken said, well, find out what she sings and take her audition. I'll listen. So I said to her, what do you sing? I said, do you have your music? No. She said, I haven't got my music. And I said, give me an idea and I'll go back and get some music. And she said, well, I know a chorus of Jeannie with the light brown hair. And she wanted to be on the air. That was her.
were you there? I presume you were. Yes, I should know you were there when Jeannie Elm was singing there.
Oh, sure. I should say. So, Frank Scott.
Yeah. Who were some of the other radio personnel besides? Do you remember any of the names?
Well,
of
Mary
any of the announcers?
Lou Dunkirk, of course, and we had a program every Sunday, a religious program for all the various denominations, and we'd do the hymns of whatever church it was, and had her. And then I accompanied Ken when he did poems early in the morning at 8 o'clock, and that nearly killed me. I wasn't used to that, but it went on for a long, long time, and it was really quite a popular thing. And then I also did some commercials, and I even announced them, and I even did some recipes, and then a little music, and another recipe, and that went over pretty
good. And you were an early Verna Newell, were you?
Oh, yeah, sort of.
Well, I seem to remember when I was in high school, the fact that I'd come up with the Campfire Girls, and you would introduce our program with organ music, etc.
That's right.
And I think.
And the Kiddies Club, were you in the Kiddies Club?
No, I never was in the Kiddies
Club. I hope not, because I hate to think you were in the Kiddies Club.
But I remember a fellow up there by the name of Howard, Howard.
Nelson.
Howard Nelson, right.
Easiest name in the world to remember.
Yes,
that's when you forget.
That's the one you forget.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he was one of my favorite announcers.
Yeah. Well, after you, when did you ever retire, really? I mean, I don't think you ever have you?
No, I didn't. Excuse me.
That's all right. Was there any period, though, you said you worked at WAY for 28 years. Mm-hmm. Well, when you quit there, why did, you know, what went on then?
Well, then it was time for radio was the past, and it was television, and I didn't want to be on television, and my husband said, oh, what do you want to keep working for until you're hauled out to Riverside? I'll never forget that. And, I felt so bad, and Ken came out the house and tried to talk me out of it, and I said, no, I better quit now. And then I was just heartbroken. I just felt so bad that every day I wanted to cry. I missed it so much, you know. I was going to tell you one thing about that. I think you'll get a kick out of this. Is a little before I quit. Mm-hmm. I did Kenny's Kitty Club. Mm-hmm. And now there are some ladies that I played for that I belong to the Fargo Music Club. Mm-hmm. And there are some ladies there that were on the Kiddies Club that I played for.
Okay.
And boy, did they ever like to let me know that.
Oh, of course.
But I enjoy it. I really, that was a really fun program. And there was a thing that you never knew what they were going to do. They would sometimes start at the end of the piece and sing, and then I'd have to quickly change over, you know, and then they'd forget the words, and that was really kind of a chore, but it was fun to do. And a lot of them I know right now that are couples that are married, and, you know, quite a few.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, now, you mentioned that you sort of retired. That is, you weren't at the WAY or playing at any of the theaters or anything.
No.
And then...
For 28 years, I told you.
Yeah, right. But you said that you... kind of missed it all. You missed the...
Oh, I did. I missed it so much.
So, I suspect that you're certainly not retired now. You've come out of it again since this Organ Society and so on got busy with you. But all the time you played some. And I remember that you mentioned, or did I read it, that there was someone who particularly influenced you in the days after your husband died.
Well, I was, of course, that really was very depressed. We never had a family, and it was awfully hard to lose Eddie. We were a happy couple, and I really kind of was very depressed being alone. You know, mm-hmm. it's not fun to be alone.
Mm-hmm. You had no father or mother, sisters, brothers,
that's right. I'm the only child. I had nobody to lean on. I was here in Fargo just, you know, absolutely on my own. And when I lost Eddie, I was really very depressed because he was a very, well, you know.
Social, outgoing kind of person.
Yes, he was a very loving person. I'm an outgoing person. I love people, you know that. And so I kind of quit at playing because it just seemed like every time I'd start to play, I'd want to cry. And I did a lot of crying, which doesn't do a bit of good,
no.
I know. The doctor says, well, Hildegard, we can't bring Eddie back. And, of course, I knew that, too. But Stella Pollack, and I think a lot of people listening in will know who Stella Pollack is. She said, Hildegard, you cannot waste this talent. And she says, I'm going to see that you play again. And I thought, well, I don't know. I didn't think I could manage it because, as I said, if I sit down to play, well, then I start to cry. That sounds, I suppose, very shallow. Maybe that I couldn't take it any better than I did.
Grieving process is no fun, and it takes a little longer for some than others, perhaps.
Well, that's probably it. I think if you have a family, you know, but no mother or father and no children and that, and, you know, just depending upon myself. And I have to say I felt sorry for myself.
Sure.
But she got me out of this. She said, Hildegard, you cannot waste your talent. And so she got me to play for a couple of things, and I hadn't played for a few months. And I couldn't believe that I could sit down. I accompanied a very lovely singer. I couldn't believe that I could play
pick it up again.
Pick it up right away. And not probably as well, because I was out of practice, but I did it. And from that time on, I gained up the confidence and got over this depression that I had. And started to do things. And then I've been called for a lot of things, like a lot of style shows, as you know, and parties and different organizations. And I've enjoyed that a lot, too. And at the Fargo Theater, of course, you know, and playing over at Weld Hall once in
the
summertime.
Yes, tell me about that. What do you do at Weld Hall?
Well, I play for a silent picture in Weld Hall. They have one, usually the closing picture, and it's fun to do. There's they're always so nice to me over there, and it's always a full house when I play, which I'm very thrilled about.
Now, you mentioned that you hadn't played for a few months, and you were concerned about whether or not you could still do it. I suppose maybe to some people they don't quite understand that, unless they would know that you practice every day, don't you?
Yes, I play some every day.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get up in the middle of the night. I'm kind of a poor sleeper. And that's why I have to have my home, because nobody could tolerate having somebody be playing
I don't know.
2 o'clock in the morning.
I'd like to have you in an apartment right next to me.
Well, thank you. That's one of the nicest things that's been said.
The public now knows what you're doing, and lots of us come every single silent movie night to listen to you either play in the lobby, the piano, or as the last silent movie was, to hear you at the organ. And I guess most of us would say that you haven't really lost a thing. You're still going strong.
Well, thank
you. Now, I know that you and Eddie did a little traveling, with in connection with his business, and people have perhaps seen the picture of Claudette Colbert and
Jimmy Stewart.
Jimmy Stewart. You want to tell us about that trip?
Well, we were sent out to Hollywood by the firm, Eddie's firm, that owns the Fargo Theater, to see what kind of pictures that this part of the country would like. And so we met a lot of producers, and some of them are the names. I wish I'd have written them down because it's a long time ago and they are very important people. But we were there for about 3 weeks, and they came and got us every morning. in a big limousine and took us to the various studios, and that's where the picture of Jimmy Stewart and Claudette Colbert was made. And we could have had a lot of pictures taken with other stars too, but they said that the fact that we didn't try to push it, we got to see a lot more things than people that always
were just tourists.
Yes. And then one thing that I thought might be kind of interesting is that we were on the set of Lucille Ball when she had her first picture.
Oh, yeah.
And we stood and watched this picture, watched her make this picture all afternoon. Of course, now Lucille Ball, practically, I think everybody knows her. At that time, that was her first picture. Mm-hmm. And it was Ginger Rogers so many others that I can't
even. Cagney?
Yeah, Jimmy Cagney. Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, we saw that. We were on the set with that, and Ginger Rogers, I just can't think of so many.
Well, Hildegard, you had a long and wonderful life, and you're still pleasing the crowds. You're still a real crowd pleaser.
Well, I love to do it. I really do. I'm so happy that they still want me, you know. I mean, I do a lot of style shows, as you know, and it's always a pleasure to work with you, June, on the style shows that Margaret has, and I'm going to play out at the Holiday Inn this next week, and I'm going to play at the Country Club tomorrow.
Well, I just predict no end. I don't think you'll ever retire again until they do take you out.
Well, it's got to come, of course.
Well,
and I keep thinking, well, now maybe I shouldn't. And then, you know, Ted Larson, over here, he's a big teacher, and he kind of keeps me fired up because he sort of likes the thing I do, and I'm awfully proud that he wants me to, you know.
Well, I just want to thank you a lot for spending this time with us this afternoon, just thank you.
Well, I hope you haven't been all bored, and I hope anybody that listens to it isn't bored, and thank you for asking me.
Not a bit.